All right. So I can start. All right, so since this is we are slightly behind, so I want to make my story short. And this is not a very long talk, this is a very light topics, and this is an unfinished talk. I did this work several years ago, and basically this my talk is not for the expert, but for the non-expert, I think. But we learned quite a lot from this work. We learned that the hydrodynamic interaction is quite different from what we know from the usual hydrodynamic interaction in the electrolytic system is quite different from what we know about the usual and non-neutral particle systems. So let me be very introductory. So the hydrodynamic interaction, as you know, that if you have a particle here, if it moves, it creates some velocity field. And if you solve this, this is the principal equation for the Stokes equation, principal solution for the Stokes equation. So if you apply a force here, F, and it creates a force field, a very long-ranged velocity field. It decays with 1 over r, r being the distance. So if you apply a force on this particle, the particle sitting here will also move, feeling the velocity field. And this is this is called hydrodynamic interaction. Whether this is not quite the, may not be the most appropriate way of calculating this hydrodynamic interaction, the hydrodynamics, but then this is somehow something that people are using. This scheme is that people are using, the scheme that people are using. The importance of this interaction is it's very long-ranged. For example, that the so if you have some collection of particles, and suppose that these collection of particles are sitting, sedimenting under, let's say, gravity, if they settle independently, this will be the settling sedimentation velocity. It is determined by the gravitational force balanced with the Stokesian drag, where A is the the radius of individual particles. If you just collect these particles to make a one ball of the particles, then it will sediment much faster, because as it sediments, it creates the velocity field around it, and they just sum up. So if Fm, the summation would give a very large velocity, if you do this, essentially what you do is this result, that this essentially this collection of particles will settle with this velocity, and that is determined by the balance of the total force, and n being the number of the particles in this cluster. This is the total the gravitational force, and it is balanced by this Stokesian force. And what matters is that this is the characteristic size of the cluster, and that is much larger than this sedimentational velocity of individual particles by this factor. D is a dimensionality, so it's a huge number. This is why the small things in a cloud, a small droplet in a cloud, when they aggregate, they just start to fall and make the rain. And that's the long-range nature of the hydrodynamic interaction is quite important. Now, the kind of phenomena that I'm talking about is the electrophoresis. And here we have some charged particles, and we apply an electric field E, and then of course this, if this is positively charged, this particle will move this way. If the electric field is not very large, the velocity of the particle is proportional to the applied field, and the coefficient mu is called electrophoretic mobility. One can be very naive to estimate the electrophoretic velocity, and then while suppose that this, then it's very based, very, it's a very naive estimation, naive theory for the electrophoretic velocity. So the total charge is Q, and that is the total force acting on the particle, and this is balanced the same with this, the Stokes hydrodynamic drag. And so this is the velocity of the particle. And you can write it down into the form of the surface potential, the potential at the surface, which is, again, for the charged object. So this is the potential at the surface of the particle. So you can write it in this form. The velocity is divided by, is proportional to the surface potential divided by the viscosity, and epsilon is the dielectric constant. All right, so this is very naive. Now, of course, that is not right, because in reality, the real problem is much more complicated, because that this charged particles are surrounded by ions, and if you apply an electric field, well, so they form some debye layers, and under the electric field, the individual ions moves in a complex manner. So this is a sort of the standard theory. I think that's the most complete theory, I would say, that is written in many textbooks. And this is considered to be the basic equation to describe the electrophoresis. And it is, so the, well, to calculate the particle velocity, you have to solve the velocity of the solvent, water meaning what in solvent, the major component in the solution. You need to determine the ion velocity, because then you have positive and negative ions, so they move in a different way. You also have to determine this and the number density of ions, and an electric field, electric potential have to be determined. So you this is a set of equations. So that's a force balance equation for individual ions. This is the Poisson's equation in electricity to determine the electric field. And then this is the Stokes equation for the solvent, for the water. Because the ions are moving, that ions are acting as an external source for the water. So this full set of equations determined to calculate the electrophoretic velocity, you need to solve this full set of equations. That's very hard. But this has been studied by Warfor. Maybe for this is a very old story, and maybe the theory started in the 19th century, I guess, long time ago, but it took a long time for the people to get the well, this is a sort of the ultimate form, and 1978 they calculated the electrophoretic velocity as a function of the surface potential theta, and also the as a function of the ion concentration. Ion concentration is often represented by this Debye length. If you add ions, you have the kappa stands for the inverse of kappa is the Debye screening length. The kappa is the decay rate. The very naive theory that I explained to you previously is a limit that there is no ions, that you have only one charged particle in an environment. Then the theory, this very naive theory, is right. You can check it. In the other limit, where you have many ions, in the limit, so this is a naive, the limit of the very naive theory. Yeah, so this is, there's no ions added. Essentially, that the velocity is proportional to the surface potential, and this is given by the naive theory. In the other limit, where you have many, many ions, again, the velocity is proportional to the surface potential. Okay, so this here I have it in now. And surprisingly, it's actually given by the same formula, about the same formula. There is a difference. Here you have 2 over 3, and here you have 1. But essentially, that the solving this complex set of equations is not, well, okay. Essentially, not surprising result.
There is also saturation.
There is also saturation, and this has to do with this saturation in the ion distribution. I mean, whether charge condensation. There are various ways of describing it. But then I would say that this part is not so practical. This is okay, this is a theoretical result. But in practice, you do not have such a very high and this ignores this charge condensation effect. So that that part is not so much important, I guess. Yes. It's something in between. It's something. I do not. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So yeah. That's here.
Excuse me. 0 to 2.
Yeah, 0 to 2 and 2. Yeah. Okay. So it goes down here and then goes up again. Yeah. Yeah. So here you see some interesting results that at the small theta potential, surface potential, it's really boring. It's only the change. It's only change from this, just a numerical factor difference. All right. Okay. So that's one shocking for us. In the following, I want to discuss, concentrate on the special topics of a special regime where this ion concentration is very large. Kappa A is much larger than 1. And this is, of course, kappa in a usual condition is not very large. I think it's typically 1 nanometer, few nanometers. if this particle is colored, I think this situation is this is a typical situation. Now, in this situation, the problem becomes very simple, because Mark told us this morning, essentially the environment is a neutral environment. This is an ionic solution, but it does not have, it's neutral, and therefore. If you apply an electric field, it's totally inert to the electric field. I mean, it's just a usual Newtonian fluid. So the fluid velocity is determined by this Stokes equation, and to determine the electric field, one can regard this as a homogeneous conductor with some conductance sigma b, and So the electric field is obtained by solving these Laplace equations. The boundary condition is that there is no current flowing in, and the n being the no current flowing in this boundary layer. This solution, the equation for the bulk, becomes quite simple. And then the electric, the charge, the effect of surface charge only appears as a boundary. I'll skip this part. It's textbook matter. It's only a few minutes to talk, but then I skip this part. you can do some boundary layer analysis for this problem. The charge electric charge density in the bulk is zero, but there is only only near the interface. There is an the charge neutrality is violated. So if this your particle is negatively charged, the counter ions these counter ions are mobile counter ions are accumulating near the interface, and if you apply an electric field, these counter ions move, and therefore it creates this kind of the velocity gradient. Yeah, this is called the yeah. And you can analyze this by applying the equation that I showed, by just solving this Poisson-Boltzmann equations coupled with hydrodynamics. You can determine, you can show that this velocity, the result is that this is a typical velocity profile. This is a typical velocity profile, so that the velocity is zero at the surface, and then it quickly increases. In this distance is the Debye lengths, over the Debye lengths, the velocity reaches this the constant value slip. Velocity, this velocity, and it is determined by this equation.
Where is the slip plane?
The slip. That's a very good question. I think that this is one of the failure of this kind of this continuum theories. Where do you define the slip? The slip, yeah, down layer problem, and I talked about the surface potential, but surface potential really is an ill-defined quantity that depends on where you define the surface.
Okay, so if it's a big enough system, let me know where it's only a small system.
Yes. I am talking about a big system, but still, that if you go to the very microscopic model, that we can talk about the theta and the. this is the ill-defined quantity, so that depends on where you define your slip plane or the surface.
But in fact, the large-scale flow doesn't really matter at the end. You change the slip plane when you change the wall position, but the large-scale flow far away doesn't.
Yeah. But I want to stay within this approximation, right? All right. So this is the conventional way of dealing with this high ion concentration limit. So just solve this electric field and the flow field by assuming that the field of this part is a conductor and a Newtonian fluid. And the effect that this particle is charged only appears at the boundary condition, and these are the boundary conditions. This condition says that the electric current normal to the surface is zero, and this condition says that the velocity is not continuous, the velocity actually changes at over the length scale of the Debye length, but that is very small. And therefore, we can ignore that, and we assume that the particle the velocity there is a slip. The slip velocity is determined by the surface potential theta. And this is what's written in the textbooks. All right, so maybe I should stop. Yes, skip that. So one can implement that. So given the set of equations, we can develop some simulation. And this was developed by my postdoc Makino-kun, and he developed that. You can create some your own particles, and you can put your charge at an anywhere, and then you can calculate the you can calculate these so that you apply a field, electric external force or torque, and you can calculate these things, and you can calculate the time evolution of this particle motion. Now, but but this is also well known that so the first thing, the first surprising thing, I think that this was the theorem, Morrison's theorem, 1970, and it says that if your charge, if your particle is uniformly charged, if the surface potential is constant, then the this is the thing. So the theory, the electrophoretic mobility, the particle simply just translate without doing any rotation, without doing any kind of complex motion. And this is, of course, one can, indeed, one can, we can actually confirm that. The more complex situation that if you have some non-uniformly charged particle, or in this case, so this part, so I don't know how to put that. This is an, this part, the polar part, let's say, negatively charged, and this equator positively charged. And so you, if you put such particle here, okay, this is an, essentially, an, we put such particles here, then apply an electric field E, and then this is what, excuse me. What you see, it means that depending on the initial orientation that these particles, if in this part, in this, if the initial configuration of the particle is in this way, the particle just moves this way, but if it is rotating 90 degrees, and it moves the other ways. Right. The reason is that the essentially that the, this is like the swimming thing. The electrophoretic mobility is essentially that this electric field just an, give a relative velocity between particles and the environment. And depending on this, so the, if in this situation that this this the surface is giving an velocity in this way, but in the other, if in this situation that the particle will do you understand? It will move in this way. So, that this, so the configuration is quite important. So the, just imagine that many part of this some swimmers, the swimmers just are moving in a different way. depending on the initial configuration, that they swim in a different way. Right. So that's a sort of the introduction. So this is a problem that we addressed. So suppose that we have an so they were in dealing with the hydrodynamic interaction in neutral polymers. We usually say that the so this is a basic equation. So under the gravity G, and so the to determine the velocity of individual particles. so this is what you do is just to solve this equation where Hij is the Hossain tensor. This is the Fj is the force acting on the jth particles from the surrounding, from the by the other segments, by the other beads. So this is internal Fj is a summation of the force exerted on this particle J by this particle, by this segment and by that segment. And this is an external field. You solve this equation. And then then you have this result that I showed you, that the velocity is essentially proportional to the square of the molecular weight of the polymer. Now, if the if the driving force is the electric field, and if these are the charged particles, this simple expectation is not correct, as I explained to you. So naively, so you might want to put some electric effect of electric field here. This part is not correct. And so what will be the correct form for the hydrodynamic interaction? I can skip that. And in this system, we know that this electrophoretic velocity is given by is constant. So according to Morrison's theorem, if these particles are homogeneously uniformly charged, that the the electrophoretic velocity is constant. Now, the question we are addressing here is that suppose that just one segment is charged, and if we apply a force F, what will be the velocity of this particle? And then, this is a classical problem of polymers, and we know that we can calculate the velocity of this particle. Now, if this polymer has only one charged segment and apply an electric field, how does the velocity depends on, for example, the length of the chain? How does the electrophoretic velocity depends on n?
What did I do?
I should have explained this to you. So this is the correct form of the hydrodynamic interaction this should be the correct form of the hydrodynamic interaction of the charged object. Hij is a usual Ossian tensor. Fj is the non-electric force, the force exerted on this Bj by the other bits. And mu I is the electrophoretic mobility of individual segment. Essentially, so if this is plus, mu I is plus, and if this particle is negatively charged, mu I is minus. And so it should be here. We can solve this problem for this situation we have only one charged bead at the end of the polymers. We can do it in various ways, but this is an approximate theory. We can solve that problem following the sort of the standard procedure in the polymer, assuming that this polymer configuration is unchanged. The Brownian motion is so strong, the polymer just under this force F. Well, in calculating the sedimentation, or in calculating the velocity of the neutral polymers, what you do is that you essentially assume that your polymer is a rigid body. The shape, the configuration of the polymer is not affected by this external force, because the effect of Brownian motion is large enough so that the configuration of the polymer is not changed. So essentially, you assume that your polymer is a rigid object, and solve this set of equations. And if this is a rigid object, so all the beads are moving with the same velocity v, and so Okay, so this equation is all right. So this equation is valid for all segments, and the other condition is that the total force acting on the segment must be equal to F, and this gives this result. You can do the same thing for this thing, and just by solving the this set of equations, this set of equations, and you end up with the non-electron, right? So the velocity is proportional to the n to the minus 0.5 power. Well, so this is a result of simulation. The theoretical result is slightly different, I think, but this is the decay with n is different. But I now think that this is due to the asymptotic, the crossover effect. This is not correct for the large value of n. Anyway. Okay, so that's the end of my talk. The final thing is that I just want to make a comment about the reciprocal relationship. In electrophoresis, it is known that the electrophoresis is a phenomenon that if you apply an electric field, so you induce a velocity of the particles. And this is a phenomenon that I discussed, and the a related phenomenon is that the reverse. So you force the particle to move by external force. So you apply a force, and then it creates some electric field or electric current. And I do not go into the detail, but there is a reciprocal relation, Onsager's reciprocal relation. And the reciprocal relation says that, well, if you write this on a segment, under the force F, there is an electric current is induced. And the relation between the induced electric current and the applied force F is, well, for the small force, it is also linear. And the coefficient here and here are equal to each other. And this is, again, the results of the reciprocal relation, Onsager's reciprocal relation. And this is the end of my talk. And the hydrodynamic interaction for the correction of particles. You have some many particles and positively or negatively charged particles. And they are interacting with some potentials, and so you have two sets of equations. One determines the velocity of individual particles, and the other one determines the electric current in the system. This essentially tells you that the electrophoresis of an inhomogeneously charged polymers, or the sedimentation potential of such an inhomogeneous potentials. I think that's the end of my talk. Okay, thank you for your attention.
I had a question about what you said was the Onsager relation there.
Yeah.
Because it sort of seems like the force would be applied to the beam. But in principle, the electric fields apply both to the sphere and the surrounding charge in opposite ways. So when you say that it applies, does that only apply in sort of a thin shell limit where you're looking at an effective charge or?
I derive it from a very macroscopic point of view. This force here is a force. No, this force is some external force, like gravity. Yeah.
But just on the particle.
That's right.
Not on the.
Not on the. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yes.
Whereas the electric field somehow has both on the
Ohm's law argument is if the field makes the particles move, then anything which makes the particles move has to drive a current.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you come in and move particles by hand, and then there must be a current flow.
Well, I see, and so J now, but it's...
So it's an external force, which now creates a current, just as the field created the force.
But J is not necessarily simply related to the velocity.
No. It's, yeah. So, yeah. Maybe this is something for the paper who are studying this electrophenol. It's something that is well known. somehow that was, and we learned quite a lot. Somehow that was shocking for us.
Well, you just put the schedule.